Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, toy department time. Feels good to be like back in a studio doing this podcast. And Kolsky, are you situated in somewhere normal and comfortable for you?
Yeah, I'm back in the baby's room, but the baby is in my room, so I'm here by myself.
All right, I got the dog with me. You podcast with the dog often, right? So yeah, it's not really a thing for you.
Yeah, the baby now is like over 7 weeks, so he can fend for himself while I do the podcast.
All right, that's good, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel the same about the dog. She's just sleeping over in the corner. Pretty much what the baby's doing, right?
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah. All right. So fairly light show just in terms of the number of things that we're going to jump into this week. Let's start with, and I'm going to hedge on whether or not I get this title right. Too Old to Die Young?
Well done.
Okay.
I will just say that in our pre-show meeting, you flubbed the title and then said, man, it's a title that has a lot of words that are in other titles in kind of a weird combination, so I'm struggling to keep it in my brain.
Right, and it's a play on an existing phrase on top of that, you know what I mean?
Right, and my thought was, okay, that's fine, because I don't really want to keep this in my brain any longer anyway.
Okay, now I have to confess, this was something of a Chris Ryan recommendation. Mm-hmm. But as Chris Ryan was from WatchPod in Grantland, or The Ringer.
The Ringer.
Yes, yeah. Also Grantland, but The Ringer.
Also Grantland.
Yes. When he was recommending this, he was kind of like, I like this, I'm obsessed with it, but I'm not actually recommending it because it's weird. You know what I mean? So, but yeah. because it was a combination of things that seemed appealing to us, Maz Teller, Nicholas Winding.
Yeah, but you know what? I think I'm done with Nicholas Winding Refn.
He's definitely.
Because here's the thing, man. I like to drive a lot.
I did too. I really like drive. That's kind of where I was coming from with this. Is like, and I thought it was going to be driving.
Right. And the thing is, it's like I only watched one episode, to be fair, but that episode was as long as Drive and not nearly as good.
Yeah, like they are little mini movies. All these things are like an hour 30, hour 40. Yeah.
Similarly slow, but much less interesting. I don't know what Miles Teller's doing here. Like, I don't know if the direction was just don't move. And Miles Teller was like, can I say my lines? And they were like, no. Don't move, don't speak.
I feel the question of what anyone is doing here, I think, is relevant, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's sort of just, it's this weird tone poem, you know, where, you know, Miles Teller is doing, like, right from the jump is kind of doing all of these awful things, but it's not that sort of, like, we've seen that show, right, where it's like,
right.
You know, your complicated anti-hero. That's not really what's happening here.
No, he does not seem complicated at all.
Yeah, it's like the uncomplicated anti-hero. Like,
it's just a couple of dirtbag cops being dirtbags.
Yeah.
Only very slowly.
In this like weird language.
And lots of neon.
Wait, you're right. There's lots of neon. There's lots of like seedy LA. So I guess if you're into watching seedy LA. And there are some good actors in this. John Hawks is going to show up at some point. I'm excited about that. Mm-hmm. You know, Miles Teller's great. And some of the regulars are cool. Jenna Malone is in this at some point too. But it's. no one is particularly charismatic or interesting, and man, these episodes are long, and
the plot is nothing. There's nothing.
It's almost anti-plot. People. Yeah, it's just some people kind of want to kill some people. Some cops are tangled up in some bad business. There are some women who sort of also get ensnared in this bad business.
Yeah, like it's a setup, right?
Yeah.
The whole thing is a setup, and I don't have time for an hour and a half episode that's all set up for nothing.
I watched a second episode of this.
Same thing.
Yeah, and I didn't feel like, whoa, we're paying it off in episode two, so.
Yeah.
And there are 10 of these bad boys.
I don't get it.
So, I'm going to guess it continues to get really effing weird. Oh, God, I forgot about Billy Baldwin, who actually was – I sort of enjoyed Billy Baldwin's weird –
oh, was it Billy?
Yeah.
He was fun, but like
– coke-fueled turn in this.
Yeah, but same thing. Like, what was that? Like, he does the whole – like, that first episode, he just does this crazy cocaine psychosis soliloquy.
Yeah.
And it's like, why – why did I just sit through that?
I feel like that's the point, right? That is the point. So
maybe,
you know, let's do.
And I'm not saying, look, I get some I also get some mileage out of Billy Baldwin doing like sniffles and ticks while he pretends to be high on cocaine. On the other hand, what?
Yeah.
You know, like, what is this? And then like they go through this whole thing making a scene in front of her father, and then 15 minutes later, she like gets angry and walks away. I don't know, man.
Yeah, like it feels just divorced from the idea of plot and story, and you know how we feel about those kinds of
right.
things. And it's a shame because I like the vibe. You know what I mean? I'm here for cool electronic new wave music and CDLA and you know Yakuza Underworld. You know, a lot of this would be, you know, I'd be into in theory if somebody bothered to like make it at all propulsive and having some sort of forward momentum.
Yep. Agreed. Yep. Agreed. Like, this is like Nicholas Winding Refn saw Inherent Vice and was like, I want to make something darker, more modern, and where nothing happens.
Yeah, like I want to take the most meandering instincts of this movie and
right.
make a darker
and make
movie
it
out
into
of it.
An incredibly long show about nothing.
I mean, look, we can't say it's about nothing. Like maybe at some point it should be about, you know, maybe it'll be
yeah,
about
no,
something.
It should. It should for sure. And I am not interested in finding out at this point.
Yeah.
Like, it ought to come together in some way, but after an hour and a half, I'm not hopeful, and I'm not interested.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, I agree, it's a bummer, because, like, all the pieces are in place here.
Yeah, agreed. I'm looking at some of the, because now I'm on Wikipedia, I'm looking at some of the critical reviews and you're seeing stuff like, its language story does little to justify its violent tendencies. So it sounds like it may be not really getting any better, because that's exactly how I feel right now.
Yeah, that's one sentence that sums up this discussion we've just had.
It's dated and tired, and Refn should have known better. Ouch.
Sounds about right. That sounds about right. And that's the problem, is like, maybe Drive was just like, I'm not saying he got lucky,
right? But some of
it, maybe
parts.
That was it.
Yeah. Drive is still delightful, though. So I'll hold on to that.
I really like that movie.
Yeah, me too. Well, I would, that's one, if it comes on cable too, it's easy to drop in and watch some more of it
for sure. And I would much rather watch it again than watch another episode.
How about another three or four
Too
episodes
Old to Die Young,
or another nine, because there's still nine you
right.
haven't seen. All right, so swing and a miss for Amazon, who the batting average feels really low on Amazon to me right now. You know,
yep.
And I'm still trying to get into Patriot, and people keep telling me I'm missing out there.
You know what? I like Patriot, but, like, if Patriot is your premier offering, you are the Showtime to Netflix's HBO,
oh, very
right?
Very much so. Very much so. I mean, I don't know if it's their premier offering. I obviously, Fleabag is the, you know, a lot of people's choice for the best thing
but
on
that's
TV.
That's not really an Amazon show, though.
No, it's just a show that they acquired, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, if
same with Catastrophe, which is also one of the better things they do, I think. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, these are not made by them.
Right.
So, Amazon, like Netflix, has repeatedly given us shows made by them that are, in our opinion, like elite shows, and Amazon kind of doesn't.
They kind of don't. Every once in a while, you know what I mean? Like, there are definitely some things. You liked Hannah, right? I guess an Amazon original.
Yeah, I liked Hannah fine, but again, that's very much in the, like, Showtime, this is pretty good and fun range versus the, like, oh, wow, they made something here.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. So, you know, step it up, Amazon.
Figure it out. It makes me a little bit nervous about the Lord of the Rings stuff, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know
can't
that's
get,
not your stuff.
Can't
anyway,
get too
but...
fired. Like I saw those all those movies. Like I'm not, you know, I'm out. But I'm. It's not a. That's not a thing that gets me real fired up.
Yeah, I mean, it should get me fired up, but we'll see.
We shall.
And
see.
I guess with all this stuff, it's like attributing it to the parent company is probably misguided anyway. Like it's individual creators, but you know, nevertheless, we notice patterns in these things.
Yeah. While we are on the subject of Showtime, The Loudest Voice in the Room, starring a damn near unrecognizable Russell Crowe, on Showtime, the story of the birth of Fox News. We watched episode one this week, and, you know, for someone who, I don't think this is a shock to anyone, views the rise of Fox News as quite possibly the worst cultural development of our lifetimes.
Yep.
You know, this almost plays out like a horror movie, you know, for me watching it happen. But I did, in the same way that you can find a horror movie kind of riveting and enjoyable, I found it riveting and enjoyable. I loved Crow. You know, it's weird to sort of find yourself in Roger Ailes' shoes a little bit. I think the show's careful about putting you in those shoes too much. Like, they're sort of, at least, you know, in this first one, are kind of real careful to just make sure you also know he's doing a lot of bad stuff as he's doing this stuff. You know what I mean? But look, as someone who manages the content side of a media property, like... There was a lot for me to enjoy. Yeah, there was a lot for me to enjoy in this.
I mean, it's funny that if I guess I should have known better, but coming in, if you'd been like, man, one of these shows is going to be ponderous and disappointing, I probably would have thought it was the one about Fox News.
Yeah.
And this was spectacular. I thought it was spectacular. I mean, I was blown away. Russell Crowe is, like you said, almost unrecognizable, but more importantly, entirely convincing. Like, I haven't watched a ton of Roger Ailes content per se, but like, I'm all the way in on that performance.
Yeah.
And the way they're doing this from like a, this is how it happens from the ground up view, is beyond the fact that it is recounting like one of the great tragedies in our nation's history. It's fascinating. And you can see how the pieces moved and why his approach was what it was and why his approach was ultimately so successful.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes a ton of sense. It's disappointing and upsetting. And like you said, a bit horrific, but this stuff is important and it's important to understand. And I feel like, not only am I gaining some understanding, but I am massively entertained. I think, you know, it's funny. After I just like made Showtime the analog for mediocrity, I think this is as good as almost anything. I mean, for one episode, this is as good as almost anything we've watched the last year or two.
Yeah, look, and in fairness, I think we were maybe talking about a period of Showtime a couple of years ago. I think, you know, they've obviously had some
stuff
we've really
liked
since then.
You're right, but this in particular is awesome.
Yeah.
And it's really, there's nothing about this that doesn't scream, you know, high level peak TV programming.
When you're sitting there watching, you know, Roger watching the test shots of like early Sean Hannity, you know, who's like stumbling around, you know, not really understanding what he's doing, and then sort of having the knowledge of, you know, what that this guy is now probably the number one voice in the president of the United States' ear, right? You know what I mean? Like, you're like, literally, it's like watching the birth of Frankenstein's monster in some sort of way. You know what I mean? And it's terribly compelling. And
yeah, and not unlike a horror movie, you're like, you want to reach through the screen and be like, no!
Yep.
Stop this!
Yeah.
Don't go, don't open that door.
Don't do it, right? And you have to say, to Wales' credit, right? I mean, you know, the show points out that he is seeing something that people just were not seeing. You know, even the Fox people were not seeing at the time, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, if there's a description, if there's a log line of Roger Ailes' life, isn't it horrifying individual, great success?
Yeah.
I mean, that's who this guy is.
Yeah.
He's the pits. He's the worst. He's repulsive and disgusting in every way. And he's one of the biggest success stories in American history.
Yeah. I would also say there's like a single-minded pursuit. You know what I mean? It's like, like all the things that you want to criticize Fox News for, the blurring of journalism and propaganda.
Yep.
And
these are things
whatever.
He did consciously and for a purpose, and he succeeded.
Yeah. He didn't. You could say consciously. I would almost say he didn't care. I wouldn't say he was unaware. So, yeah, in that sense, he was conscious. But I also think he didn't care. He just cared about, you know, making this network powerful, right? And clearly, he has done that from the ashes of literally nothing. So,
I mean, yeah, like I say, as disgusting and repulsive as he is, you can't argue with the results on a certain level. I mean, you can argue that they're detrimental to hope and American ideals and democracy, and I think all that's true, but you can't argue that he didn't do what he set out to do.
Yep. That's absolutely true. Some really excellent also supporting people, a lot of whom we haven't really seen a lot of yet. I mean, Seth MacFarlane's in this a little bit, but, you know, Sienna Miller, Josh Charles. And then there's going to be all of these people that we know, you know, on Fox now or later today, you know, kind of haven't appeared in the story yet over the next couple of episodes that I'm kind of looking forward to. So,
it's true. This against all odds, like, you and I are now both looking forward to watching Fox News.
Yeah, who knew? all right. So,
I honestly, for anybody, can't recommend this strongly enough. It's harder to see because this is the history that we lived through, but like, this feels like a historical document in an important way to me.
Yes. And I should also note that this comes from the Gabriel Sherman book, and he's a fantastic reporter on Fox News issues and really broke a lot of the Ailes harassment stories. So
yeah.
All right. You want to jump into sports?
Yeah, let's sports it up.
Because there's a lot of sports happening. So if you're one of those non-sports people, we'll see you next week. All right. So basically, we got a new NBA. Since the last time we talked, and we predicted that it might be that way.
Can we just start broadly with, do you like that we get a new NBA? Like, this is the first time it's been this dramatic, I guess. But, like, let's say we get this every 2 or 3 years. Do you like that? A new NBA every 2 or 3 years? Is that something you favor?
Is that something you might be interested in? No. I don't know.
Really?
It seems like the kind of thing that I would like. And I'm pretty sure that there was definitely a point where I was like, the NBA, there's four teams that can win. it's, you know, it's one team for every 5 years and then a new team comes along, and that's boring. But, you know, and a lot of it could be because I was personally invested in the team that was at the top now, and I'm sad to sort of see them sort of churned back into the just sort of the mix of the NBA. I don't and I am excited for this upcoming season and the sort of the idea of, wow, this is really a toss-up. They're probably 10, 12 teams that think they can win this thing. But I don't know that I'd want it to be the NFL. You know, I don't know that I'd want the NBA to be the NFL where you come into the year and you're like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it'd be a weird league to be run that way. So does that make sense?
Kind of. And I guess we'll see how it plays out. But I love it. Just as a basketball fan, I love it because, well, and I think part of this is the team I'm most invested in as a fan stinks anyway.
Right, and you'd like them not to stink.
The Bulls' fortunes have not changed all that much, although I like their offseason. But for me, and okay, so first of all, if Kawhi goes to L.A., like, don't we kind of have that same thing again? Yeah, a lot of people change places, but
you're right.
There's a team that looks like dominant. So to the Lakers, anyway.
That's still on the table, obviously, the you know, the Lakers
Kawhi
being prohibitive Lakers. Favorites.
Well, let's say that
trio.
Doesn't happen.
And if you're asking me to get, like, I don't see that happening. It just doesn't, you know, look, Kawhi's a hard guy to predict, and no one really knows what's going on with him, but it just does not seem very Kawhi for him to go to the
Lakers.
Let's
not, yeah, okay, but let's hold predictions because this could be done by the time the podcast is published.
Oh, I suppose that's true. On the record. I'm happy to be wrong if I'm wrong about that. He doesn't feel like a Laker to me. And then what the Lakers do with that leftover money, since no other free agents are, I should say no, but, you know, there aren't very a ton true. Of free agents left at this point. That will also be very interesting.
All of that is true. Here's what I'm saying. Let's say for the sake of argument, he doesn't. You're right. Okay. So Kawhi's not a Laker. Like you said, there's somewhere between 9 and 15 are going to think they have a real shot at this, which is potentially most of the playoffs, which is an incredible thing, I think. But maybe more than that, part of me at this point in my life views the NBA. This is an over-dramatization, but I don't mind the view of the NBA as a giant pool of players who every few years get picked into teams for a pickup tournament. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm not saying they're playing pickup. Like, obviously, it's a much higher level than that, and there's much more thought that goes into it.
This almost feels like it's pickup, but it's like where, you know, everybody gets in a line and shoots free throws to figure out the team. So the teams they don't quite clump up fairly. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but you know what they do is they clump different interesting combinations of players together and give franchises an opportunity to try to turn that interesting collection into a cohesive whole that can actually do something. And like when Philly makes trades and puts together arguably the best starting lineup in basketball last year, me as a basketball fan, I'm excited to watch it, to see what it looks like. And I feel the same way about the new Philadelphia 76ers. When Boston flounders with Kyrie Irving all year, a guy we all consider to be at least around the top 10 in the NBA, and they essentially trade down for Kemba Walker, but maybe that's better. Like these stories of like new, interesting basketball combination. How does this work? I love that stuff.
Yeah. Look, there's a lot of how does this work? And I'm like, don't get me wrong. I'm not anti this summer. Like, this is all great and fun, and the NBA would be fun. I just don't know that I want to do this every 2 years in perpetuity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And I don't think there's going to be a lot of years where this many free agents are up and on the move. But just the idea of – I mean, look at the Warriors. They made a move nobody thought was even on the table to bring in a guy who might not work because – they know sitting idly and letting your championship roster atrophy is a recipe for becoming the San Francisco Giants. Yeah, you know, it's a recipe for sustained struggles when all your guys age out. They turned this roster from one of the oldest in the league to one of the youngest in the league in the matter of days, and somehow ended up with assets nobody expected that they could compile. Might not work.
I was going to say, where are you on the idea that this is just Houston Rockets style asset or acquire assets, worry less about fit, and then spin them into other things? Like that they just wanted to get something back for Durant, and that Russell, you know, will not be a Warrior at the end of the season. Are you buying that idea?
I think it depends what happens. I don't think you do this deal if you don't believe there's at least a chance that you catch fire, you catch lightning in a bottle. I don't believe you do this if you're positive. Look, we're going to have to move D'Angelo Russell again, but at least we got this asset. Now, maybe that is what happened, but my suspicion is because they also, remember, had to sell D'Angelo Russell on this. Like, he reportedly had an offer from the Timberwolves that was the same size. And even if he didn't...
Oh, the Wolves definitely wanted him.
Right. And even if he didn't get... wouldn't have gotten quite the same money, like, I think we've seen most of these guys can lose a few million here or there and pick it up in advertising or whatever. Like, I find it hard to believe...
Or they could just give money to DeAndre Jordan for no apparent reason.
Right, or just, like, become friends with superstars, and then you'll get paid into your late 30s for no reason. But no, seriously, if you're D'Angelo Russell, and I'm the Warriors saying, yeah, I know you got this offer from the T-Wolves, and the Lakers might want you, but sign this deal and come to us, and then we'll trade you later? Like, that doesn't really add up for me from the D'Angelo Russell side. And frankly, if that's the only goal, it's not the best plan from the Warriors side either, because, you know, they could have just kept the Andre Iguodala expiring contract and see how that played out. But I think what happened was they realized Andre Iguodala can't do what they need. They need someone to play 25, 30 minutes a night during the regular season.
And I think Zach Lowe put this well. It's like, if you don't think that you are a championship contender in this particular season, there's not really any point in having Andre Iguodala.
Exactly. And so they made changes.
Which is why there's zero chance he's going to be a Memphis Grizzly at the end of this year either.
And the thing about that is, you know, the Warriors were in a tough spot where it was hard to see them as a contender if they didn't make a move like this.
Yeah.
Now, listen. D'Angelo Russell had a breakout season and became an all-star last year, and he's playing with better star talent around him now than he did last year. He could be better, and if he is, and this fit somehow comes together, this could be one of the most potent offensive teams of all time when Klay gets back. One of the most potent three-guard lineups anyway. Now, can they defend? You know, do they have enough depth? These are all questions, but if Kawhi is not a Laker, aren't they right in the mix with teams like Portland and Houston? And, like, you're going to have to convince me that Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, and stuff is better than Steph, Russell, Klay, Draymond, and stuff. I don't know that it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that's when you start getting into what and stuff entails. You know what I mean?
That's right.
And there's a lot of unknown there. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think
there's a lot of unknown, and they're right in the mix. And that describes such a large percentage of teams. Like, I don't really have a problem with dynasty basketball because I like great stuff.
Yeah.
So Kawhi goes to the Lakers. I'm excited to see how that works. I think it's the greatest three-person team of all time.
Let's say Kawhi's never been a better top three. There's never been, you can't say that you've had a at least I can think of right now, top three better
Unless
than that.
Maybe the 60s Celtics, I don't know. But certainly in my lifetime, this is better than anything
we've seen. Mikhail Parrish, I guess, is in that
no
mix.
No way.
But no, you're right. I don't think. Yeah, I mean, I think that you're talking about three of the top 20 to five players ever, maybe?
Maybe, but even
definitely
just
three of the top 40,
you
know.
Just look at how they stand in the league now.
Yeah.
Like, you've got three of the top six.
Definitely. Let's say three of the top 10. But, yeah, for sure.
Count them.
Yeah.
Who's better?
you know.
Seriously. Steph, KD's not here.
Right. If you're not counting KD, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. It's probably three of the top six. Yeah.
Steph is in the group. Giannis is in the group.
Harden, maybe.
Maybe. I wouldn't necessarily put him there. I feel like Lillard might be there. I like Lillard better than Harden.
Do you?
But that's it.
Yeah, I'm still taking Harden over Lillard.
I like Lillard better, and I think all three of those guys are better than both of them anyway.
Yeah. All right, that's fair.
Like, Steph is in the mix with those guys, and Giannis is in the mix with those guys, and there's nobody else I'd want before those three guys on my team.
Yeah.
Ever.
Unless,
you know, Durant, if he comes back and is Durant, but he's not.
Let's say Kawhi does not go to the Lakers. Are the Lakers in that mix of contenders?
Well, what's interesting is, as they've waited for Kawhi, they have lost the ability to build out what I think they should have done in the first place, which is spending that max money on three guys who are pretty darn good.
Yeah, and also and they've instead, shown not to have a lot of ability to identify talent on the cheap.
That's true.
They drafted okay. So, okay.
But if LeBron and Anthony Davis are healthy, you telling me you're not gonna pick them to be in the playoffs?
I didn't say in the playoffs, but if we're talking about winning the title, LeBron and Davis and eight hot plates of hot garbage, I'm not picking that to win the title. We just saw what LeBron and you know what I mean and next to nothing. Looks like. And the supporting cast is going to be much worse than that supporting cast last year.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I think it is.
It's not going to be much worse.
We're talking about minimum salary guys, no young guys with potential besides Kuzma.
It doesn't have to be minimum salary guys, though. If Kawhi doesn't show up.
They have $30 million to build out, like, eight spots or something like that.
Yeah, but that's a couple of decent. I mean, they'll be able to. The problem is who's out there, not the money. If Kawhi doesn't sign, the problem is not what money they have left. The problem is who do you want. But if it's DeMarcus Cousins and Marcus Morris and, you know, like, they're not going to have a deep team, clearly. But are you telling me once they're in the playoffs, you don't give them a puncher's chance against anybody with those two dudes?
Like I said, depends on who else is on the team, and you know, and we don't necessarily know the health of either one of those guys at that point. Both of those two dudes have injuries, some injury history now, so
they have to stay healthy. But I don't. There's no point talking about that in my view. They got to stay healthy. But if they stay healthy, there's no the thing is, everyone is thinking about this as if we're in the old NBA world, where the Warriors were too good to get past. Who is too good to get past right now?
No, yeah, I'm not thinking of it that way. I'm not thinking of it that way. You know, I mean, puncher's chance, okay. Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess. But I do think there are other teams that I would favor more over LeBron and Davis and literally nothing else.
Yeah, right now I'd probably have Denver and Utah ahead of that. Maybe Portland, but they've done some weird things.
I definitely have Houston ahead of this team.
Oh, I think Houston's going to be even worse this year.
I think Houston could be even worse, and I would still have them ahead of this Laker team. As currently composed. We'll see what it looks like, you know what I mean?
They were a four seed last year, so, you know, I don't. If they get worse, I think they're in danger of not making the playoffs.
I don't know. You take. I feel like if you take last year's team and remove the Warriors as an obstacle, then you're talking about an NBA finalist.
Yeah, but I'm talking regular season. They beat the Warriors, I think, 3 out of 4 times.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, that team, last year's team, yes, the 4 seed, I think would have won the Western Conference Finals. Had, like, if KD and Klay gotten hurt in round 1, right, then I think that Houston wins the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, I don't know who would have beat him, but I just don't agree with that.
Yeah. All right, fair enough.
Until one of those guys or that team actually does something, I'm not buying it.
I guess. All right. But can I be a contrarian for a second? And I don't know if I've done this on the pod before, but I have kind of come the other way on Kyrie Irving in that, like, yes, last year did not go great. But I feel like this notion of, well, he can't lead a team. He's definitely a problem. You don't want him to be a number one guy. He's not a leader. I feel like we're reading too much into this Boston stint because it happened in Boston. And that, yes, it maybe didn't go well, but that doesn't mean that he can't figure it out.
Fine.
Still all a top 10 guy in the league and still a world champion.
I don't know about top 10. Most of that is true, except I disagree strongly on one thing. I do think we've seen quite clearly, if you want to win a title, he can't be your number one guy. But that's a basketball issue to me.
How do we say we've seen that quite clearly? So, look, the year one in Boston, obviously, like, they, you know, the team they had, he didn't really play in the playoffs, so we don't, you know, know. Yes, last year was bad. He, you know, kind of quit on them maybe in that second playoff series or whatever. He but, like, we've seen LeBron quit in playoff series, and nobody doesn't think he's a champion, right? So,
Kyrie's the champion. That's just factual.
Yeah, but I just think, like, look, has he been the number one guy on a world champion? Obviously not. I'm not willing to say he can't be, though. Just not. He's too good. I get he's a little weird. He's too good.
I disagree. I don't think he's good enough. I think based on what I've seen, he's a guy that you're happy to have the ball in his hands down the stretch of a big game, but he's not a guy that you're going to have a ton of success if he's your best player.
I don't know, man. That guy hit some big shots. And like I said, I still think he has room
so
to figure stuff out and improve his game. So
lots of guys hit big shots. Not everybody who hits a big shot is a leader or the best player.
I understand that, but not every guy who hits big shot. I mean, like, to, you know, yeah, okay, sure, you could talk about Robert Horry, but Robert Horry was never the best dribbler in the game on top of his big shot making.
No, I'm not comparing them as players. I'm just making the point that big shots don't make you the best player
on
your team.
No, but Kyrie is unguardable when he wants to be. I think that's without dispute, right?
He's tremendous, and he's one of the best guys in the league to watch. And he's incredibly good. I mean, he's definitely top 15, if not top 10. But he also does things that don't help.
Yeah.
He doesn't play defense. And I don't know that he makes his teammates better at all.
Yeah. Yes, he did not. I don't know if he makes his teammates better than all is a fair statement. But my counter to that is to then say definitively that he can't do that because he hasn't done that yet, I don't agree with that. I think that that is something right. that you have to learn to do. And just because he hasn't learned it yet doesn't mean he won't.
I suppose that's fair. I guess I would just say it's getting late early.
I guess. I guess it is. I just think because this thing happened in Boston.
He's been in the league 8.
Yeah, but he's been in this role for 2. You know what I mean? And he's still pretty young and relatively healthy. So,
well, he's 27 and he's 27. Not relatively healthy.
He's relatively healthy.
Show me a player who significantly improved or gained significant leadership qualities after age 27.
When did Michael Jordan start to figure all this stuff out? How old was he? I'm just asking. I don't know if he's 27 or not. I'm trying to make
like
a point.
25.
You know, I don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of NBA players' ages, so
yeah,
it's hard for me to answer that question. But I'm pretty sure that if I looked, I could find an example.
I don't know, man. It's possible. I'm not saying it because I know that doesn't exist. I'm saying it because I can't think of anybody. And I think usually we get a pretty good picture of who guys are by the time they're 27. Especially when they've been in the league since age, you know, 19 or whatever. It's an eight-year career. Like, that's probably more than half of a career, right?
Michael Jordan,
I guess maybe not.
Bulls won their first NBA title in 1990-91, correct?
Yeah, he was like 27 when that happened, yeah. But...
Okay, just saying. He's
32. He's 32, 5, 8, and 8 at age 25. 8 assists as the most dominant scoring guard in the history of the game. I mean, just that's not a perfect indicator of who he was, but like you
right.
see the assists.
He went from being a ball at some point in Jordan's career, he went from being a ball dominant dude, right, to being a guy who could completely lead and elevate a team, right? Like he was and leading the team when they were losing to the Pistons.
Yes.
But like his ability went to a different level over time, right?
Before they won the title, though. Like, happened. That's what I'm saying. That happened in 88, 89. When they were starting to meet the Pistons in the conference final.
I'm just saying, I bet a few 27-year-olds have figured it out. I think it takes that.
Again, it's
and
not
again,
impossible.
Only his second season in a situation where he's even really the guy. So...
I guess, but doesn't it seem like he watched the guy and took all the wrong lessons?
Yeah, sure did.
Okay,
but
so then,
again, none of that says to me that you can't figure it out.
No,
that's just what
happened. Anything is possible. I just don't think it's likely.
All right. Well,
again, for me, it's more basketball than, or as much basketball as any of that stuff. I just don't think he's quite good enough to be the number one dude on a title team.
Okay.
Think about who are the number one dudes on the title teams we've watched recently. Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Tim Duncan, Kobe.
Yeah. I think Kyrie Irving's
not that level.
Kyrie Irving is not that level, but I think he has a ceiling that's in that level. He just has to reach it.
I would say the only team... Maybe the only team in my lifetime with a best player not quite as good as Kyrie Irving is the Detroit Pistons. And honestly, I think I'd rather have that Rasheed Wallace than this Kyrie Irving.
Oh. You don't think Kyrie Irving could be as good as Dirk Nowitzki?
No.
Or Dwayne Wade?
No, I really don't.
I do.
No.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, vastly different players.
Wade,
but you know what I mean?
What'd you say?
Vastly different players, obviously, than, you know, but...
Yeah,
yeah,
I think maybe he has an outside chance to reach the height of Wade, but if you look at Wade's titles, he had at least one guy who was arguably...
Yeah, he had help. But you're just saying, was he the best guy on the title team? He was, right?
Which one?
Shaq won? Yeah, I would say...
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. You're right. Maybe not.
And that's my point, is like, Dwayne Wade...
But Dirk Nowitzki definitely was, right?
But again, I don't think Kyrie. I think you're really selling Dirk short if you're putting Kyrie on his level.
I'm just saying. I think if you're asking me, do I think Kyrie Irving could at someday be as good as Dirk Nowitzki? I think yes. I'm not saying he is as good as Dirk Nowitzki, but part of that is because we think of Dirk Nowitzki as like best guy at a title team, right? So,
well, no, I think part of what's happening here is you're thinking of Dirk Nowitzki as the guy you watched the last.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I remember how good Dirk was.
Are you sure?
I am sure. Yes, I watched all those series. Anyway,
all right.
Let's switch gears here. I want to ask you know because you mentioned Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Do you look at them as the best team in the East now? Because I have some real questions about how the reconstituted Sixers fit together.
I look at them as definitely in that conversation. I think, like you say, it's very hard to answer that question sight unseen because so much has changed. It's one thing when you add one or two or subtract one or two players, but when you make fundamental shifts to the core of your team, it feels like it's harder to predict what that's going to look like. I will say, just on roster talent and what I would imagine, it's them and Milwaukee, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, unless Kawhi stays in Toronto.
Sure. But Toronto's nothing without Kawhi. I mean, nothing.
Yeah.
They might not be the
player. Yeah, they switched to rebuilding around Siakam mode, I guess.
I don't know what they do. But they're the Clippers, basically, right? A collection of good role players missing a star.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that makes the playoffs. Anyway, here's what I think. There's tiers in the East now, and the top tier is Philly and Milwaukee and, you know, Toronto if Kawhi does go back there. And then... Tier two has just got a lot more interesting. Right?
Tier two is what? Boston, Indiana, Brooklyn?
Well, at least them. I think. Let's see. Hold on. Let me just pull up a list of teams so that I don't forget anybody.
I mean, do you have Miami in there? Do you think Atlanta gets that better?
Yeah, I don't know about Atlanta. I think Miami is definitely in there with Jimmy Butler. I think, look, Atlanta has a chance to bust in there.
That would be a big leap for Atlanta, I feel like.
It would, but Detroit has a chance to bust in there. And then teams like certainly at least we could say teams like Atlanta and Chicago have a good shot at sneaking into the playoffs with like modest upgrades and that, young players getting better.
That's a different tier then. I mean, they're like tier three.
Yeah, so that's the third tier. So if tier two is Indiana, Brooklyn, and Boston, I think you probably have to put Detroit and Miami in there too.
I just I don't know. I'm less high on Detroit and Miami than who did Detroit add?
Derrick Rose, but they still have Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond, which is like.
Yeah, I mean, that's the eighth seed is what that is. That's 41 and 41. But it's just Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond.
Yeah, right. But again, I don't know, man. It depends what Blake Griffin is, right? But if Blake Griffin can give us a full season of good Blake Griffin, isn't he around the top 10 in the league? Wasn't the best of what we saw from Blake Griffin last year pushing the top 10?
I mean, if in your mind Kyrie Irving is a top 15 player, then I'm not putting Blake Griffin ahead of Kyrie Irving. I'm not.
Are you sure a healthy Blake Griffin isn't better than Kyrie Irving?
I'm very sure.
Okay.
But that's just me. Maybe I like Kyrie Irving more than everyone else. I don't know how we got to that place.
Well, let me just give you some stuff on Blake last year. So let's see. Finished the season 24.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists. Shot 46% overall, 36 from three, which is not great.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's an all NBA player. I'm not saying he was trash. I'm just saying I don't think he's as good as Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's close for me. I mean, I think they're in the same tier of players if Blake is healthy. And I would also point out, what it's worth,
always an if. Not, Kyrie is something of an if health wise too, though. So I'm not...
Yeah, they're both ifs health wise. But I would also just point out that, you know, I mean, and this it may be that this is what we're getting from now on, so it's not fair to give him extra credit. But before the All-Star break, he was 26-8 and 5.5, and he was shooting 48% from the field. So, you know, it may be that like Blake Griffin only has 50 good games in him every year.
Yeah, I just look, all the stuff we talk about with Kyrie, you know, that we spent a long time on, like. Every single bit of that applies to Blake Griffin, right? Where are you going with Blake Griffin as your top guy? We have now quite a few years of experience.
That I agree with. But you don't have the locker room destruction and
Are we forgetting the equipment manager that Blake Griffin punched out in the middle of the season? Broke his hand on?
That was bad.
Yeah, I'm just saying that there's plenty of locker room dysfunction in the Blake Griffin CV.
Yeah, most of the locker room dysfunction of the Clippers, I give Chris Paul the credit for. But whatever. Either way, Blake Griffin didn't make all the young players on his team this year want to leave. I don't know how much to attribute to that, but if I'm the Nets and I'm dropping Kyrie Irving,
at what point is that a Brad Stevens issue as much as it is a Kyrie Irving issue? Like, that's a lot of blame to put on the freaking point guard when all your young players want to leave, right? Doesn't the guy managing the minutes get at least some of that? I know we're not allowed to say anything bad about Brad Stevens ever.
No, I mean, I think Brad Stevens' reputation has taken a huge hit. I still think he's one of the better coaches in the league. And I still think most of those guys wanted to get away from Kyrie, not their minutes.
I guess.
But
I want to talk about. Can we talk about how weird the Sixers lineup is? Because they're always a weird lineup. They're always a matchup problem. But it's everybody's 6'9". You know, you got a point guard who they didn't trust in crunch time that they're about to max out. It's It's all very interesting to me.
The message, right? The message is we got to trust you in crunch time. You're not going to be standing on the baseline waiting for dunks anymore. We can't do that.
I guess, but I mean he's got to shoot more than 5 times in a game for that to sort of work, right? So
probably. Yeah. I mean, you'd like to see that.
It's sort of a weird situation, I feel like. There's obviously a lot of talent there, a lot of talent, and there's,
a
you know,
ton of talent.
But it all fits together in sort of a weird way.
They're counting on Joel Embiid to be in shape and ready to go every night. They're counting on Al Horford bringing a level of professionalism and consistency to the young players. And they're counting on Tobias Harris being a lot more than he was after they acquired him last year. Yeah.
Hopefully the leap from option 4 to option 3 has a positive effect on his game.
I think that's, who knows, but I think that's a reasonable expectation given what we've seen from Tobias Harris in the past and the fact that he was kind of relegated to fourth option a lot of the time in Philly. But it's no sure thing, that's for sure. And the other things are even less sure things. Like Al Horford could be the greatest veteran leader in the world, but Boston still blew up last year.
Yeah.
I don't think that's Al Horford's fault, but he wasn't able to stop Kyrie from blowing the locker room up. So he helps, but he's not a panacea. Ultimately, this is going to come down to like how motivated are Embiid and Simmons to be better. They both have to be better.
Yeah. We got through all of this without even discussing the idea of how good the New Orleans Pelicans might be.
I'm very excited about this. And boy, does this show you the difference between trying to operate as a general manager when you need to make LeBron happy and trying to operate as a general manager when you're basically in full control of your many resources.
Yeah.
Because the stuff David Griffin has done is so savvy and smart and fits together so well. And when he was the GM for the Cavs, it's not that I thought he was bad, but everything just felt like LeBron.
You didn't think he was the GM for the Cavs when he was the GM for the Cavs, right? Like
right.
That's what I thought.
Right. Like, basically.
He's like the guy that picks up the phone and does what LeBron and Gilbert write on sheets of paper, right? Like that's what your impression was.
And even more so now after what you see the way he's operated in New Orleans, incredibly intelligently and savvily, that – it really seems like he was forced to make decisions he would not have made otherwise, and that's why that team was not better.
Yeah, man, those Lakers picks. That's wow. Yep. It's the future there is so bright. I'm not exactly sure how 2020 looks for them, but
you mean this year?
2019/20. But
the thing is that's no longer a priority. Like, yeah, you want to be as good as you can be this coming year. But – and by the way, I think he's done some incredible stuff to make that possible. J.J. Redick signing is fantastic.
Yeah.
The trade obviously gives them a ton of options.
The trade was great. The draft day maneuvering was great. It's all been great, yeah. And their future is great. No, you know.
Yeah.
So it'll
I do think that's another team. You know, if we do the tier thing in the Western Conference, that's another team that's in the hunt for a playoff spot.
Yeah, they're in that third tier, right? Of could make the playoffs.
Well, except there might only be two tiers. Well, unless you count poop. But the poop tier
I'm counting
is just
poop.
The Suns and Grizzlies.
I've got the Wolves in that tier. The poop tier.
Yeah, you're probably right, but they do still have
Carl
an
Anthony
incredible
Towns.
Young talent.
But we've seen what just that gets you.
No, you're right. That's probably
win.
Those three.
Yeah.
But like the Kings, the Mavericks, the Pelicans, the Clippers. The Spurs.
The Clippers could be in any tier, depending on what happens these next couple of days.
Well, right. But if they don't get Kawhi, all those teams I just listed, probably even the Thunder and the Warriors, are all like you want to say they're playoff teams, but not all of them are going to make it.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to.
And that's the second tier. The first tier, like, it's probably just L.A. and Denver and Utah, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I don't.
Again, I'm higher on Houston than you are.
Oklahoma City, Portland. None of these teams got better, really.
Right. I'm higher on Houston than you are, but yeah. And the thing is we're going to get some of these wrong, right? A couple of these are going to be wrong. So,
yeah, probably. But it's still very exciting to be in this place right now.
Yeah,
that's how I feel about it.
All right, we got to get going. So,
Did you want to do the Socceroos or whatever we call our team?
I mean, there's not that much to say other than that they've been tremendous television, right? Like, true warriors.
I have two things.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, that's not true. I have one question and one totally not controversial take. So why don't I start with the totally not controversial take? Nothing should have been more predictable or just depressingly... basically, of course, every asshole came out of the woodwork to try to miscast Alex Morgan's tea-sipping celebration as a weed-smoking celebration when any moron could watch that clip and watch her tilt a teacup.
I did not hear that. That was a thing?
Oh, that was a huge thing. And here's the other thing.
That's literally the first I've heard of this.
Here's the other thing about it. So what if it was a weed-smoking celebration? Maybe Alex Morgan likes weed, and if she does, congratulations to her.
She lives in California. It's legal where she is. Yeah.
By the way, if somebody scored a goal and mimed drinking a beer or taking a shot, that'd be totally cool.
Yeah. But, I mean, the tea thing is expert trolling.
Yes.
And I have to say, we have spent – I don't think this is actually a gender issue. I think it's a sports media issue. But, man, we've now definitely spent too much time on the various celebrations of these women over the course of this tournament, you know?
I kind of think it's a gender issue.
Look, it happens. It happens in other – it definitely happens in other sports as well. So I don't know that I'm willing to go there.
What's the most famous moment in women's soccer?
I mean, we have these debates about baseball –
no, but
throughout the season.
I know where
you're going with this. It's Brandy. You're going to say Brandy Chastain because she took the bra off or whatever, or the
and
shirt
people
off.
People are still up in arms about it.
Are they? Are people up in arms about it, though?
That might be strong. People still think it was wildly inappropriate for some reason. People still think she should not have done that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Men do it every game.
Yeah, all the time.
Every game.
Well, you know, boobs.
So I'm not... Yeah, her boobs didn't come out. I'm not telling – volleyball athletes wear that. That's their uniform.
Yeah.
It's not – there was nothing risque about a woman in a sports bra.
Yeah, look, I didn't realize that was still a – I mean, it's an iconic moment, but I didn't realize it was still controversial for people.
But the point is, like, that's still – people don't even remember – like, people who are not actual fans of this don't remember Brandi Chastain's name, don't remember what the circumstances were. They just remember some chick took her shirt off at a soccer game. And I'm not saying we wouldn't still get people complaining about these celebrations if it were men. I'm saying let's not pretend the gender part doesn't play a big role.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that – the gender part plays a role in that, right? There are just so few images of women's soccer that's, you know, look, I watch a lot of women's soccer. I actually follow the U.S. WNT when they are not playing in World Cups. So for me, I can think of lots of other moments. But for, you know, most people, that's the one they recall because it's by far the most visible. And I do think that thing is going to sort of change because this seems legitimately popular.
Why is it the most visible? How many World Cups have we won since then?
I believe we have won twice since then. Because the World Cup came down to penalties, you know, another there wasn't a like
but again,
moment.
People don't even
like it. There isn't a moment where you could say that you could say no, because of course you do, because you're watching. It's one kick, and the one kick wins the game or does not. You know what I mean? Like that doesn't. You don't get that situation sort of in soccer where it's like, here's the thing. She's going to shoot a shot and make it or not, and that's going to determine the outcome of the match. Like that doesn't really like.
That's I think
usually
if you ask,
when you have a match that ends in the run of play, it's, you know what I mean? Like, you're not going to have the same sort of attention focused on that moment. And then that was their first World Cup, and there was this massive celebration on top of it. Like, you know, like that's why that's an iconic moment. And yes, it was controversial, of course.
Derek,
now,
if she scores that goal in the 85th minute and celebrates it the same way, are you honestly suggesting it gets less attention?
If your time, no, the better question is if she scores that goal in the 26th minute and celebrates the same way, do we remember it the same? And I don't know that we do.
Oh, I really don't. I strongly believe we do. And I would argue that there have been a number of equally meaningful goals scored by women's national team players since that moment.
Okay,
we
like such as
none of them. We don't remember them.
All right.
They've won two World Cups since then. You're telling me nobody scored an important goal?
I'm not saying no one scored an important goal, but there was a lot more ass-kicking in those other World Cups.
All right. Either way, I'm not talking about people who watch a ton of this stuff, because those are not the people complaining about Megan Rapinoe spreading her arms too wide.
Now, we can talk about that, and you know, and other countries or whatever painting this team as arrogant, like that's we can talk about that.
But how is that?
And that
you,
I think
you,
it may be
how
more
can you
gender
not think
based.
That's, well, that's what we're talking about.
But
isn't
I don't
it, the celebrations.
Well, yes and no. You know what I mean? The Thailand match where, you know, celebrating goal 12. That's a sports etiquette thing. It's much more like the baseball conversation.
Yeah, I don't love that.
Right? Right. See, exactly. Right? So that's what I'm saying. Like, there's sort of different nuances to this. And if we just want to throw it all in the gender thing, you know what I mean?
No. I don't think I was doing that. Yeah. I'm not throwing it all in the gender thing. I'm just saying that's clearly a significant
fact. There are also
fact.
A lot of people who want to hate Megan Rapinoe, you know, for different reasons, right? So like it's all, you know what I mean? Like it's all tied in together, right? There are also people who want to love Megan Rapinoe for different reasons, right?
Right.
So,
I mean, I would just, again, maybe this is me being cynical, but I feel like there's I don't want to speculate, but there's a significant percentage, if not more than half, a significant percentage of the people who dislike Megan Rapinoe are colored by extreme gender or sexuality bias.
Yeah, see, I would say the majority, in fact, of people who dislike Megan Rapinoe are colored by political bias. You know, which is somewhat related to her gender, but I think it's much more anti-left or anti-gay than it is anti-women. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
I guess, but that's a fine line, man. This is we don't need to have this conversation here. I don't necessarily believe you can separate those things.
Yeah, like I said, that is my entire point. That's kind of all in a blender. So I think to just say it's this or it's that, it's difficult.
No, it's not. It's
but I would also
things,
say
but,
I feel but, sorry but, for anyone who is like who can't enjoy watching this team.
That
particularly
question.
Watching Megan Rapinoe play, because her game is tremendously entertaining.
That brings me to my question. Is Megan Rapinoe the greatest soccer athlete in our history?
We sort of talked about this on Twitter. I'm a definite no on that. I'm not sure she's the greatest soccer player on this team currently.
That's crazy.
So, I mean,
that's crazy to me.
I think
you're saying Alex Morgan's better?
I think you could definitely make a case for Alex Morgan. I mean, look, some of the stuff Rose Lavelle was doing,
she was great yesterday.
Yeah. You know, like,
that's one game.
Look, the fact is that she doesn't start yesterday due to injury, and they don't lose anything with Christian Press playing in her place. Like, Christian Press is on her level. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she's.
Oh, I don't agree.
I'm not saying that I'd rather have Rapinoe. There's a reason Rapinoe is the full time starter, but, like, she's not, like, heads and bounds, you know, and then you start getting into Abby Wambach and certainly Mia Hamm. Obviously, you know, slightly Wallach different and era. Ham
have the numbers. Obviously.
You know, Michelle Akers even before that was a really, nah. really dominant player. So
yeah, but okay. So here's where I'm coming at this from.
You know, and then obviously, you know, I know you're not a fan, but you have to talk about what Landon Donovan has done against much better competition. Much better competition, if we're being frank.
Yeah, of course it's much better competition, but I don't give Landon Donovan. Yeah, I shouldn't have brought this up because I don't even want to have the Landon Donovan conversation.
Let's not have the Landon Donovan conversation. But
then we had the conversation, and I've done you the great favor of cutting it out for your listening pleasure, which means I take you now live to the end of the podcast.
We gotta go. I really gotta go. Shit.
Yeah, I don't know if we're gonna be able to publish any of this.
Can we do homework now?
Yeah.
Here we are. Here's homework. I have no idea how we got into a 20-minute soccer detour.
Oh, we didn't. I'm cutting it.
I was so happy that we were going to talk about soccer, and then it turned into this. Now I'm sad.
Well, because of your unreasonable All
right. Okay. We're gonna have to cut all this too. Let's stop talking about soccer. Let's start talking about homework.
I tried.
We have a little mini thing to watch. There's a new Aziz Ansari comedy special. Have you taken in much Aziz stand up since the controversy?
I don't know.
I have not. I'm curious to see what this is like. I'm not. Aziz is not on Louis C.K. Island with me or anything. I think the behavior in question was much more different. But I'm curious to see. There's an HBO show called Years and Years, which looks pretty interesting. It stars Emma Thompson. I believe premiered last night. We're going to check that out. Kolsky, you're a big fan of Love Island. Just in general, yay?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was more of a phase, but I did enjoy it.
So it was a little too much content for me.
That's the problem. The content becomes overwhelming.
So they're doing an American version, which I know is not going to have that problem.
Correct. How weird is that? Isn't it weird that the American version in this case is the content light version of a TV show? It's usually the other way around.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
The Brits do something over 5 episodes, and then we take it and make it 50.
Yeah, although I will say, like, Big Brother is another example of that, I think, right, where the American version is much shorter than the...
Yeah, because what it is like, the Brits do have this... unending appetite for be celebrity.
Yeah.
Always have.
And they'll throw that thing on every night. Yeah, then no problem there in 5 nights a week.
Right. So they just throw it on. I assume like the Brits are just throwing it on in the background and like living their life alongside these people on a night to night basis. Whereas television in America always feels more appointment.
Yeah.
You know? I show up for my Wednesday at 8 p.m. or whatever. But not like, oh, I just live with this every night.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Sorry, I got stuck in Landon's Wikipedia page for a second. All right. So, and the other thing that we were talking about is yesterday, which we may or may not see, just like last week. I think I'm gonna have time to get to the movies this week because I got a couple of long days ahead of me. So we're gonna give it a shot.
I'm trying, but I got a baby, and I just wasted 25 minutes talking about soccer that's never going to see the light of day.
I know there's so much time I'm never going to get back. All right, we really have to go. I don't know when this is going to be in public or what it's going to sound like, but I'm glad you listened to it, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.